This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankowski. Mark Crino, Evan Green, Andy Chatfield, and Eric Della Vecchia have been performing under the name Stanley Maxwell for the last 14 years. They're a Connecticut-based quartet with a jazz meets rock meets funk sound. The four of them recently joined us in our Studio 3 to share some of the music that has kept them together for all this time. Later, we'll hear an update about a surprising message the band received after they were on Where We Live the first time. Mark, Evan, Andy, and Eric, welcome to Where We Live.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Okay, so first of all, you knew this is going to be the first question. Who's Stanley Maxwell?
So, Stanley Maxwell is a fictitious character, supposedly. We all went to high school in Bristol, except for Evan, but we all graduated about exactly 20 years ago this June. And before we went off to different colleges, we went to Nantucket for a week to celebrate our departure. And one of those evenings, a gentleman wanted to camp in our backyard, and he regaled us with stories of his life. And he kept referring to, oh, you know Stanley Maxwell. He owns all the windmills in San Francisco. We just thought it was hilarious. We found out the next morning it wasn't so funny. He was actually a fugitive, and we allowed him the opportunity to skip bail by camping in our backyard. So this character that we all should know, Stanley Maxwell, became the name of the group, and the windmill that he supposedly owns became our logo.
Did you actually check this out? I mean, did you look into whether or not there was a Stanley Maxwell, some sort of a windmill impresario in San Francisco or not?
Probably about 8 years ago, I did some Google searches for Stanley Maxwell, windmill, San Francisco, and all I came up with were the pictures of, like, the windmills, but nothing about anyone named Stanley Maxwell.
There's a writer in Brazil, Stanley something Maxwell, I can't remember.
There's also a painter, Stanley Maxwell Bryce, which we come up number one, and Stanley Maxwell Bryce is always just below that.
Always just below that. Right, maybe someday. Maybe someday you'll overtake Stanley Maxwell Bryce. A lot of people form bands in high school, and a lot of times it's a rock band. Maybe you're playing covers, or maybe you have some original tunes that you want to play. I also run into an awful lot of players around here, you know, with Great Hall High School up the street. There's a lot of people who are in jazz bands in high school and then go on to jazz programs and end up playing jazz. But I don't hear a whole lot about high school jazz bands forming and then kind of being together 20 years later. Do you guys see that as unusual as I do?
It is unusual. I think it's a special connection that the four of us have. I mean, I feel like they're my brothers. They were the best men at my wedding. So there's a connection. We started out covering classic rock kind of tunes and then got more into funk, and then some of us discovered jazz later than others. But combining the elements, all of those, you know, what we like, the groove out of the funk, improvisation out of jazz, the power of rock.
The power of rock. Not, I like that. We're talking with the band Stanley Maxwell. We'll be hearing some of their music played live for us here in our Studio 3 throughout the course of our program here. Are all of you seriously trained jazz musicians, or is there a mix there? Because there's another divide. There's jazz players who then end up playing rock music, and then there's rock players who sort of play jazz. Sometimes there's a little tension between those two camps. I mean, where do you guys fall? Are you, you know, are you really, like, seriously trained jazz musicians?
I was brought up in classical saxophone. So I actually went to school for classical saxophone. I mean, I love jazz, obviously, but that's what I did. So I didn't really actually seriously start getting into woodshedding and learning jazz tunes and all that stuff until college. It was a whole nother direction.
Absolutely.
That from, you know.
Yeah, and there's the classical saxophone world is a very specific world.
It's a very specific world. Yeah, I don't even say classical. Probably the contemporary, obviously, classical.
Yeah.
Saxophone.
How about you, Evan?
For me, I started classical when I was young, and I was interested in improvisation. I was interested in just sort of like strange harmonies and things like that. But it's weird. I don't know. Growing up in Bristol, feels like the jazz is a secret society that I like. I think I like it, but I don't know what it is. It's like somebody has to hand you a Monk album in a dark alley and say, yeah, dude, check this out. So I've started like sort of finding derivative ways into jazz. I'd like cheesy blues lick would come on in a car commercial, and I'd transcribe it and figure out what's going on there.
As driving.
Yeah, that's don't tell my wife. Yeah. So I kind of pieced together. I found myself gravitating towards anything with improvisation, and jazz seemed like something to follow. So I got really serious about it in college.
Mark, how about you?
Playing bass, I started out with rock when I was, you know, maybe eighth grade. I was in my brother's metal band and started out that way. Then as, you know, I started learning more and, you know, started taking in some more influences. learning more about bass and about bass players. You know, I started getting into some Stranger Things, like Primus and that kind of stuff, pop. And just, I mean, there's bass is so strong in so many things, you know, reggae, funk. It sort of just started, you know, eating up all these different other things.
But you didn't start the way a lot of people who end up in bands like this started, with this Jaco Pastorius. And everyone thinks about Jaco. Yeah. And this is like, it's like the mountain. Everyone wants to play like the Great Weather Report bassist. That wasn't your starting point.
No. I did get there. I love Jaco now. I didn't really get into jazz until really after college for me, when I started playing with these guys again. I sort of had to play a little catch up. So that's sort of that thing you were saying about coming in from a different angle. They had already trained a little bit in school and played in combos and stuff like that,
yeah.
As opposed to me, where I was in more classic rock and, you know, that kind of thing.
Andy, how about you?
So I started on trombone in fourth grade, and somewhere in my mind, I feel like I wanted to play drums at that time, but my mom didn't think it was music, so I went to my second choice of trombone. She denies that story this day, but that's what I believe. So I played trombone. I was pretty good at it up through till I got to high school. I didn't want to be in marching band anymore. So then sophomore year of high school, I got a drum set for an early Christmas present for Thanksgiving, started teaching it to myself in the garage and in my bedroom. When I got to college is when I decided I wanted to pursue music. So the first day I got to Syracuse University, I went to the College of Visual and Performing Arts, went to the percussion teacher. I'm like, I want to study music. Took a year of lessons, auditioned my sophomore year, transferred in, had a recital my senior year. So I basically lived in the practice room in Syracuse. Everybody asked me how the Syracuse winters were. I'm like, I was in the practice room all night.
I have no idea.
I don't know.
We're in our Studio 3 talking with the band Stanley Maxwell. We're going to be hearing them play some music live here. A number of the tunes we're going to hear were written by drummer Andy Chatfield, including this one. It's called In the Shadow of Vesuvius. This is Where We Live. Thank you. tune's called In the Shadow of Vesuvius, and the band is Stanley Maxwell. I'm John Dankosky, and this is Where We Live. They're playing live for us in our Studio 3. Andy Chatfield's the drummer of the band. You wrote the tune. Tell us about the tune.
So almost all of my compositions come from my dreams, whether I wake up with a fragment of a melody that I heard in my dream and then at some point gather all these fragments and say, oh, that's a horn part, that sounds like a keyboard part, that sounds like a bass line. In the Shadow of Vesuvius was a unique situation where on my honeymoon I went to Italy with my wife, Joanne, and then we were in Naples, literally in the Shadow of Vesuvius. And at some point after that trip to Italy, I had a dream where the four of us and Stanley Maxwell were in Naples playing on the street in the Shadow of Vesuvius, playing this fully composed song as you just heard it here in the studio. So I literally woke up and wrote down the song that we were playing in Naples. So that is what you hear.
That particular,
it was a fully formed song as opposed to me waking up with fragments and trying to piece them together. It was a fully formed song that we were playing in Italy in my dream.
Speaking of, well, go ahead.
Just because I've had that exact same experience of, like, you know, having music in a dream and waking up and like furiously writing it down and then realizing a day or two later that it was somebody else's tune.
Oh yeah, that's always a terrible feeling. In the Shadow of Vesuvius, it sounds like a track on kind of a 1970s prog rock record. I mean, you can sort of you can sort of see this being a title track of a sort of a Yes ripoff band. I love the title. This is great. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about some of the influences, because there's jazz and there's funk and there's obviously rock. I mean, there's a lot of things that people may hear in here which sound a little bit familiar to them. I'll ask you first, Mark, what's a big influence for you? You mentioned some of the influences that you had as you were sort of growing up learning how to play bass, but what are some other musical influences that you think of when you think of this band?
One thing that we sort of had in common was like the jam band scene. So a lot of times I think of that because the way that we structure our jams, not necessarily consciously, it's more of a similar way to the way a jam band would jam, where you sort of build up some energy, and you know, to sort of like a climax, and then bring it down.
Well, so you're saying one specific jam band? Fill us in here, Eric.
Yeah, we're all big fish nerds.
You're big fish nerds.
We got it.
I know one thing I like about playing with these guys is this. I don't feel like there's this. I feel like we've all played with groups of people who have this circumscribed notion of what jazz is or what rock is, and it can be limiting, and I feel like I often think of a we took a trip, we played a festival out in Tulsa a few years back, and we had this game going on where we'd listen to someone would be DJing in the passenger seat, you know, in the shotgun, and we'd see, like, how are we going to get from Astor Piazzolla to A Tribe Called Quest, and so you know, like, it'll go through techno, through like bluegrass, through. And just good music is good music. I feel like it's everyone in this group's got kind of an open mind.
Yeah. Let's hear another one of the songs from the band Stanley Maxwell, who joins us here in our Studio 3. It's a tune called Egg Sauce Ted. It's written by drummer Andy Chatfield. Let's hear it first, then we can talk about it a bit on Where We Live. Thank you. a song called Egg Sauce Ted. It's written by Andy Chatfield. He's the drummer in the band Stanley Maxwell. The other musicians we're hearing today in our Studio 3, Mark Carino, who's the bass player, Evan Green plays keyboards, and Eric Delavecchia is the alto saxophonist. This is Where We Live. Tell us about the tune, Andy.
Egg Sauce Ted is one of a few songs that I have where the name of the song is a humorous play on words. I think the way to say it is a mondegreen, where you can hear it certain ways. So you can hear it, Egg Sauce Ted, or exhausted, which at the time that I was writing this, I was at a really stressful point in my career, and I would just be exhausted every morning if I was staying up late trying to write music. This one was influenced particularly by Modesky, Martin, and Wood. I spent 3 summers studying with them in the Catskills, and that period of time refocused my energies on the creative side of music, as opposed to, for a while, I was kind of getting caught up in the business side of booking and promoting and not really focusing on all these fragments of music that I had been gathering for, you know, for several years. So there was a period of time I sat down and wrote about 10 tunes, you know, a tune a day. And it was after that experience of studying with Modesty Martin Wood that I was really shifting my focus back to being creative and writing a whole batch of tunes. And, you know, some of the tunes that will be debuting at Wesleyan are from that batch that we just haven't gotten a chance to play yet. So we're going to dust those off and give them their premiere.
How often do you guys play these days? I mean, obviously, you all have day gigs, and there's a lot going on in your life. And how often are you getting together and playing gigs like this?
So this is a special occasion. Like you were saying, we all have different musical projects that we play in. For the past 4 or so summers, we've had residencies in the summer. In July and August, we play every Friday night over at the Shops at Farmington Valley in Canton. There was a summer series. They featured us there for 4 years. That was a great experience. We didn't really focus on playing composed tunes there. That we really focused on improvising and jamming literally the whole night for a majority of those gigs. So this occasion to perform at Wesleyan gave me the idea to pull out some of these songs that were written years ago but have never been worked on and performed, and there's a chance to kind of showcase them.
I'm reading here that some of the tunes are influenced by, just as you were saying earlier, you know, this wide range of music. Frank Zappa, Christian McBride, the great jazz bass player, Fela Kuti, Michael Jackson, Primus. There's a lot of influences in there.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's just from listening a lot. I mean, just listening to an awful lot of music and picking up things along the way.
Yeah, like Evan was saying, you know, we listen to a lot of different kinds of music that are good, whether it's jazz or rock or funk or pop or disco or R&B, and taking pieces of those, you know, taking, not literally stealing it, but kind of going to sleep, and then it gets filtered through my dreams. And then Michael Jackson's bass line comes together with Chris Potter's horn part. And
well, one of the things that I was thinking about this recently, because I was reading a history of the Talking Heads' Remain in Light, and how when Brian Eno came into the studio with him, he brought a Fela Kuti record called Aphrodisiac. And it's a record that Eno found in a record store, and he sort of put it on. And it completely transformed not only his thinking about music, but then it transformed that record and the next record. And essentially, I mean, we have all of this music in the last 30, 40 years that's really based on people being able to get snippets of things they probably never would have heard before. And then they bring it into the studio, and they turn it into something that is kind of theirs. It's kind of unique. It's a little bit like here, you know, having that dream and wondering if somebody else's tune, but it's just absorbing a bunch of music over a lot of time. Does that sound about right?
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned Frank Zappa, and I was just thinking about, like, I remember reading somewhere about he clearly has sort of a 20th century postmodern or modernism classical influence too, but I read somewhere that his punk music or his sort of rebellion music was Stockhausen, and he found this record that's like, it's like, my mom's going to hate this.
Yeah.
Put that on as sort of his rebellion music, and that he found a new world that way. But anything we can pick up that grabs your ears, whatever the genre.
Stanley Maxwell will be performing Saturday, May 30th at 8 p.m. at the Buttonwood Tree Performing Arts and Cultural Center in Middletown. For more information, visit buttonwood.org. When we come back, we'll hear more from the band. This is Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. We're listening back to a conversation with the Connecticut-based band Stanley Maxwell. They're made up of Mark Crino, Evan Green, Andy Chatfield, and Eric Delavecchia. They'll be performing May 30th at 8 p.m. It's a Saturday, Buttonwood Tree Performing Arts and Cultural Center in Middletown. Later on, we'll hear an update on a surprising phone call that happened after the show originally aired back in February. Here's a song they played for us in Studio 3. It's called Hall & Oates. The tune is called Hall & Oates by Andy Chatfield. He wrote it. He's the drummer of the band Stanley Maxwell. They're playing live in our Studio 3 today. Obviously, Hall & Oates is a reference to a band that we may have heard of before.
So that song title is another Mondegreen where obviously it refers to Hall & Oates. But also my composition process that I was talking about where if I have all these fragments from my dreams but I haven't put them together into a song yet, I'm kind of hauling all these different notes around until I finally get a chance to sit down and put them together into an actual song. The funny thing about this song, similar to In the Shadow of Vesuvius, I had a dream that Hall & Oates were playing on an electronic drum kit, and they were playing this rhythm in 7, which became the song Hall & Oates. So the rhythm that Hall & Oates were playing on this electronic drum machine in my dream became the rhythm in 7 that you hear throughout
the
tune.
Okay, favorite Hall & Oates song?
Mark and I covered last summer, I Can't Go For That.
There you go. That's pretty good. You have a favorite? Is that your favorite?
Yeah, I think I would say that too.
Yeah, we have a couple big Hall & Oates fans in the newsroom. We were just talking about Hall & Oates. It's something if you're about my age, that's what you grew up with. Before we hear it, I want to talk about this last tune. It's a song by Evan. It's called Mousetrap, and this is a song that's won some awards. It's gotten quite a bit of acclaim, and it has this amazing, interesting, intricate open. Can you tell me about writing this song?
I was really, at the time I wrote the song, I was really kind of interested in some of the organicism of someone like Thelonious Monk, where he takes just this cell, or, you know, also actually some, I'm thinking of some classical composers too that do the same thing, but just take a cell and just try to find a way to develop it and turn it into something that, you know, organically grows into a piece of music. So, I don't know, just started with this little piece and found it working through, and it had this angular melody to it that just felt like a mousetrap. It's got this one bar of five that feels like this. Felt kind of mousy to me, and it traps at the end. So that's where that came from.
Here's Stanley Maxwell playing the song Mousetrap live in our Studio 3.
Thank you.
That song is called Mousetrap. It's performed for us by Stanley Maxwell. Well, I wish you guys the best of luck, and thank you so much for coming in and playing live for us. It's always great to talk with bands and listen to the music that they play, but when you come in and actually play live in our studio for us, it's a great thrill for us. So thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Stanley Maxwell is made up of Mark Crino, Evan Green, Andy Chatfield, and Eric Delavecchia. They're going to be playing Saturday, May 30th at 8 p.m. at the Buttonwood Tree Performing Arts and Cultural Center in Middletown. If you'd like more information, visit buttonwood.org. After this break, we're going to hear an update on the band about a surprising message that they received right after the show originally aired back in February. This is Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Today in the program, we're revisiting our interview with the local jazz quartet Stanley Maxwell. When we first met the group about 3 months ago, we asked musicians Andy Chatfield, Mark Crino, Eric Delavecchia, and Evan Green to explain the origin of their unusual name. Let's re-listen. Okay, so first of all, you knew this is going to be the first question. Who's Stanley Maxwell?
The Stanley Maxwell is a fictitious character, supposedly. We all went to high school in Bristol, except for Evan. But we all graduated about exactly 20 years ago this June. And before we went off to different colleges, we went to Nantucket for a week to celebrate our departure. And one of those evenings, a gentleman wanted to camp in our backyard. And he regaled us with stories of his life. And he kept referring to, oh, you know Stanley Maxwell. He owns all the windmills in San Francisco. We just thought it was hilarious. We found out the next morning it wasn't so funny. He was actually a fugitive, and we allowed him the opportunity to skip bail by camping in our backyard. So this character that we all should know, Stanley Maxwell, became the name of the group, and the windmill that he supposedly owns became our logo.
Sometimes being in the right place at the right time with your radio tuned to WNPR can lead to unexpected connections. WNPR producer Lydia Brown has our story.
Drummer Andy Chatfield was still groggy when he checked his voicemail on the morning of Sunday, March 1st. He'd had a long night and was about to start an even longer day, preparing for Stanley Maxwell's afternoon gig at Wesleyan University. But what he heard coming through his phone speaker sent a rush of adrenaline through his veins.
Hi, my name is Debbie Charon. I just heard the interview with you on Connecticut Public Radio, and my husband has heard it, and I have to say I'm completely in shock because my father is the Stanley with the windmills in California, and his last name is not Maxwell, but that's my grandfather's name.
Debbie Charon and her husband, Tim Deal, live together in Northampton, Massachusetts. On the evening of February 27th, Tim had been waiting to pick their son up from a bus stop in Cromwell, Connecticut, when a rebroadcast of the band's interview began playing on his car radio.
Because I'm sitting in a place where I would never be, there was a McDonald's there, in a parking lot, and I'm searching on the radio for some jazz or something, and then this whole interview started. And as the interview was going on, I said, you're talking about my father. I'm talking out loud to nobody. And I was talking to the radio. I said, you don't even, this is my father-in-law. It's Stanley Chair, not Stanley Maxwell. Stanley Chair.
Tim went home and played the interview for Debbie, who, in a rush of excitement, tracked down Andy Chatfield's contact information. The next evening, she left Andy several messages explaining that it was her father, Stanley Charon, who was responsible for the wind farms in the Nantucket Man story, not Stanley Maxwell. Andy couldn't believe it.
I definitely wanted to have our band meet her father and play some music for him. And so over the next probably month and a half, we were emailing back and forth trying to figure out the best time for us to come up to Massachusetts to meet her dad, and working with the assisted living facility in terms of finding a space in their schedule for us to do a short concert.
On Sunday, April 19th, the band loaded their cars and headed up to Dedham, Massachusetts to meet Stanley, Debbie, and Tim. Around 10 a.m., they arrived at Newbridge-on-the-Charles, the quaint retirement community where Stanley now lives.
Hi, I'm Andy Chatfield. Hi. Nice to meet you.
Mark Reno, nice to meet
you. Boy, I couldn't tell the difference. Nice to meet you.
After a few quick hellos with the Charon family, it was time for everyone to settle into the facility's small recital room. There, the musicians spent the next 45 minutes serenading Stanley in front of a crowd of his fellow residents. When the concert was over, Stanley, Tim, Debbie, and the band made their way up to Stanley's apartment. Inside, photographs and pieces of wind turbines adorned the walls and bookcases. Stanley is 90 years old, and Alzheimer's disease has made it hard for him to remember a lot of details about his life. But if there's one thing that's stuck in his memory all these years, it's his windmills.
Oh, yes. See, I gave Al Gore the key in 1990 to turn on the first windmill in front of the Capitol, and it turned on the first 50 machines of that wind plant. Wow. How was that?
In the mid-1970s, Stanley brought together a team of experts from Harvard and Yale and founded U.S. Wind Power in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Together, they built the world's first wind farm at Crotchet Mountain in southern New Hampshire. The company later relocated to the San Francisco Bay Area and, in 1988, was renamed Kennetec Wind Power. Stanley retired from Kennetec in 1995. Little did he realize that 20 years later, his legacy would live on in a jazz band from Connecticut. Again, Andy Chatfield.
It's a really strange coincidence that we were on Nantucket and heard this story, and it was funny enough to stick in our minds long enough to name a band after this supposedly fictitious character. You know, a full 6 years after we heard the story, and then 14 years later, we're still telling the story of how we named the band, and someone happens to hear it on the radio. It seems like more than just a coincidence. There must have been a reason that we were supposed to meet him and go and play for him. So I'm not sure exactly what that is yet, but it seems like more than a coincidence that we happened to name the band after him, and then all of these things lined up so that we could actually meet somebody we thought was a character in some kind of fairy tale or tall tale.
Andy says the band is already planning its next trip to visit Stanley in Massachusetts.
That was Where We Live producer Lydia Brown. For more on Stanley Maxwell's incredible story, including a video by WNPR's Ryan King, visit our website, WNPR.org. Our show is produced by Lydia Brown, Tucker Ives, Betsy Kaplan, and Kion Wolf. Our digital editor is Heather Brandon. Our executive producer is Katie Talarski. Continue our conversation on our website, WNPR.org/where we live. I'm John Dankosky. Thanks for joining us.